Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. On the show this week, Rachel Malcolm and Chris Patterson are joined by Scotland star Jerry Maxwell as she reflects on the Women's Six Nations.
Well, welcome back to the Scottish Rugby Podcast and delighted to be joined by Scottish Women's scrum half Jenny Maxwell, fresh off the victory in the Six Nations against Wales on Saturday. Jenny, thanks for joining us. A truncated or a shortened Six Nations campaign, but it ended really well on Saturday with a victory at Scotstoun.
Yeah, girls are absolutely over the moon to have got that win at Scotstoun. I think it's been a long time coming for us. And just really happy to have been able to build on the two previous games that we weren't totally happy with. So chuffed a bit.
What do you reckon was the biggest difference in the Wales game to maybe the previous two games that we got right that we maybe didn't in the previous two?
I don't know. I think obviously I didn't play huge amounts of time in the England game.
That was the problem.
Just answered the question.
I mean, you think that. And obviously playing against a team like England, you're under a huge amount of pressure for 80 minutes. And I think Italy, we had such high hopes for that game. And we did play some good rugby and there were some good patches within that game, but it almost looked like we were kind of in shackles, if that makes sense. And we were just so uptight. It was almost like we were really trying to do the right things, but just wasn't quite coming off, or we weren't really doing it with enough conviction. I think going into the Wales game, we just knew we didn't focus too much on them going into it, really just focused on ourselves and just throwing absolutely everything at them. And we knew that we were able to play with more tempo than we had been in the previous games and things like that. So it was just about bringing that energy from the first few minutes, because obviously in the Italy game, that was what we struggled with a little bit.
It's funny you should say that, because it's potentially more pressure going into the game against Wales after an indifferent performance. And a performance, really, that I don't think many people saw coming against Italy. There was good parts of it, but it was actually building up through all the progression that in some ways we're expecting a win against Italy. So to deliver under even more pressure the following week against Wales, where you come off the back of defeat, was pretty good. Does that show maturity within the squad, or was it as well down to the time spent together, another week together? You know, again, it was only third game, really, wasn't it? So is that time together, or is that a maturity, or perhaps both within the squad?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Mossy, really. I think it is a bit of both. I think we've had a huge disruption going into this tournament in terms of when our World Cup qualifiers were supposed to be, and they were on and then they were off. And we've been waiting to play that Italy game for such a long time. Maybe that was the kind of pressure. And like you say, having that extra week following that game just to kind of go back to the drawing board and know what we needed to do in that Wales game. Obviously, we had other disruptions prior to kind of outside of COVID with obviously injuries and losing Captain Rach and things like that. And we've seen huge growth within the squad with those younger players. The confidence that I saw in them in that Wales week was massive. And I think they showed it on the pitch as well. And the Italy game for me, when I came on, was just a little bit quiet. And I think maybe we kind of gone into ourselves a little bit and managed to somehow blow those cobwebs away in the Wales week, and some of the girls really, really stepped up.
Do you think having that Italy game, you know, and like looking bigger picture with like what we've got coming up and stuff, do you actually think long run it's maybe done us, will do us good to have had that setback at maybe this point in our season or going into next season, in terms of like the massive learnings you've obviously already taken from it?
Yeah, I think this whole tournament will be a huge positive for us. Obviously the Wales win will give us huge confidence, and some of those girls that have kind of been first caps this tournament and things, they'll take huge confidence in that. But equally, they've now felt the hurt of losing an international game, and one that, like Marcy said, we were more than capable of winning and we didn't perform. And I think there's players now that have felt that, and they can kind of use that and spur us on when we meet them again, hopefully towards the end of the year.
Yeah, and again, I suppose moving on to the Wales game, you mentioned it there, Jenny, a good start was really important. I thought you got that. Not only the try, the first try was excellent. The speed, the tempo, the ball retention, the accuracy and attack. But probably more importantly for me, the kind of 10 or 15 minutes after that where you really had to dig in and defend. I mean, there was a period, I don't, it must have been about 10 minutes, I reckon, where I think Wales had a lot of possession, a lot of territory. But that dogged edge was there not to let them cross the line. That must have been pleasing as well, I think.
Hugely pleasing, because that was what we had struggled with the week before in terms of compounding errors and or doing something brilliant, like getting points on the board and then backing it up with something really uncharacteristic. And yeah, we really worked hard in the week going into the Wales game in terms of the aggression that we wanted to bring in defence. And we thought we'd let ourselves down there a little bit previously. So yeah, really, really pleasing. Like you say, great to get points on the board nice and early and then kind of ride that storm when Wales were throwing things at us.
Yeah, I actually thought like it almost looked as if, especially like that 10 to 20 minutes period, it looked like the Italy game, but the shoe was on the other foot. Like in defence, like they had the ball for like quite large spells, but they weren't going anywhere. And then whenever they started to go somewhere, they were the ones making errors. And then we were getting penalties and being able to exit and whatever else. And it just looked like, from a defensive point of view, I don't know how it felt on the pitch, but you were in so much more control, like your systems were working. It looked like you had that trust in each other and everything like that.
Definitely. Hugely. We've worked really hard on it in the week in terms of staying connected and then being aggressive off the line. And it felt good as well. Like you say, we were forcing Wales into errors and then kind of thriving off those, which was just what we wanted to do. And it's definitely something that we can't leave in that game. We need to take that forwards for sure.
I think Wales obviously had a poor tournament in terms of results, but I was quite impressed with a lot of their physicality. Jasmine Joyce at fullback as well, so it's probably one of the quickest players, I assume, in the game.
Yeah.
I was really quite impressed with her early on, but even your defence to cover that, to counteract that, was impressive. So I suppose what I'm trying to say is Wales were probably better than the results show. Would that be fair as well? Therefore, underlining how good a performance and result it was for you guys.
Yeah, no, definitely. I completely agree. And you know, we saw they fought right to the death and they got that try right in the dying minute.
You made them work for it, though.
We did. They also made us work for it. We were stuck in our 22 for quite a while there, trying to keep them out. But no, they always bring the physicality. You know they're going to be strong over the ball at the breakdown, and they bring that definitely. And they've got some really good players across the board. And I think you look at their previous games, for example, their game against Ireland, where Ireland ran away with the game in the first half. I could be wrong, but I don't think Ireland scored a point in the second half.
Yeah. So
it just shows that Wales, they are a strong defensive team, and when they turn it on, they are able to keep teams out, and they showed that in our game and in some of their previous games as well.
I think as well with Wales, like they've got quite similar values to us as a team, like in terms of like their passion and that kind of never give up attitude. So I think the fact that they did score at the death is like very kind of in line with what they're about and that kind of giving it all for the shirt and never giving up, which is very similar to us in that way. And I think, you know, you look at when we played them, what was it, 2 years ago, Jen, when we lost in the 81st minute to them scoring the death. So it's kind of, it is a very Wales thing to do.
I actually saw a bit of niggle as well at the weekend. The Welsh number 8 was having a goal. I can't remember. I don't know if you were nearby, Jen, but
she loves it.
She's
a Saris girl.
Was it? Wales had won a penalty and there was a bit of whooping and hollering and celebrating and somebody came ragdolling out the back. I thought, here we go. It's a bit spicy.
Yeah, you'll get that. It's always a good contest. I quite like seeing that. It's good.
Yeah. Jen's usually in the middle of it.
No.
See this like innocent face that she puts out to the public is not what you see on a rugby pitch, tell you that much.
It's a scrum half. It's in the jeans as a scrum half.
That's
there's actually a brilliant clip from our training when Jen gets into a scuffle with me, Rach McLachlan. You're probably the two worst in our team. And all you can hear in the background is Brian Eason going, "Yes, Jenny!"
the DNA of a scrum half, but great to get a start against Wales as well. But it's been a a long road back from a serious injury as well. When was that, 18 months ago or so, or just over a year ago, he had a bad knee injury. And how much, I mean, I was lucky, I've never, you know, had a serious injury that kept me out for that length of time, but how fulfilling is it to get back, get starting, and certainly winning for Scotland as well after such a long period out?
Honestly, it's been absolutely incredible. I think that, like you said, the last sort of 14, 15 months or whatever it's been, it's been tough for everyone, obviously, with the situation in across the world at the moment. But personally, I kind of took the opportunity to get my rehab done. But when you start in that kind of recovery from injury, when you start in that journey, you don't know what player you're going to be when you come out the other side of it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie, those times at the start, I thought, will I ever be as quick as I was before? Would I be able to step like I did before, or whatever it is? For me, I can just take huge confidence in kind of what I've done over the last few months with the team. And obviously started off with a few minutes off the bench against England, and then about 20 off the bench against Italy, and then to get a start against Wales it's just a dream come true, really. And then to get 80 minutes under my belt, to know that I'm physically capable of doing that international level now, is, I've got no excuses now. I just need to to keep bringing it every week. So over the moon.
Do you think, Rach, this is probably a bit deeper, a bit strange, but do you think, say with an ACL, a knee injury, you roughly know the duration you're going to be out, and it is a long time. It could be a year, it could be 9 months, that duration. Do you think that makes it easier or more difficult for players to have a target to get back than an injury that you don't actually have, you know, a potential return date for? Because I mean, having such a long time to devote yourself to the rehab and the heart of going through that on your own without your teammates is hard enough, but knowing roughly where the end point is, does it make it easier or more difficult, do you think?
I think there's bits of it that are easier and probably bits of it that are more difficult. I think that initial diagnosis, and I obviously don't know because I haven't done my ACL, but that initial diagnosis of hearing those letters for any rugby player, like, I think that's probably one of the toughest things you can probably hear, other than the fact that maybe your career's over from an injury. And I think that is super tough to take because you know that it's going to be such a long road. But I think within that road, you have kind of peaks and troughs within it in terms of how focused you are. Jen was actually, and I'm not just saying this because she's here, was in terms of people that I've kind of seen go through long-term injuries, she literally did not complain once and, you know, never really seemed to lose that focus or energy towards a rehab, which was pretty inspiring for all of us to see. But like, I think for most people during like a 9 month, a year out, you have those peaks and those troughs and that kind of dwindling in energy. So there's tougher points in it. Whereas like with the likes of say a concussion where you just don't know where the end point is, I do think that is really tough because you haven't got these kind of
something to work towards or a
really clear pathway through it. I think there's different elements which are tough. But with anyone that comes back from that length of time out, and for Jen, like coming in and seeing her perform the way she did at the weekend, it's just brilliant. It's so great.
How hard is it to stay positive through all of that? Or did you stay positive?
I think I was pretty positive.
You were.
I don't know if COVID was a small blessing in disguise, in the sense that I just don't feel like I can complain with the year that I've had. I missed 3 international games for Scotland, which is unheard of. Obviously, I did miss quite a few club games. I did stay pretty positive. I think probably the hardest bit for me is that kind of, when you're in your initial stages, you have those real clear check boxes of you need to be able to do this, this, and this, and then you move on, and then this, this, and this, and you move on. Whereas towards the end, it's kind of that you're technically fit, you're technically doing all of the elements of training, but are you quite there? Are you quite sharp enough? And I've been training for quite a long time, probably since just before Christmas, in terms of all elements of training. And it's just taken a little while to kind of get that sharpness back, which as a scrum half, is really important in terms of the decision making under pressure and things like that. And that only really comes with playing. But when I'm in a competitive squad at club and at international level, as everyone wants to be, that was probably one of the hardest bits. Just really, really chuffed to be back with the girls. It's it's great.
Do you see, I guess, like, because you've obviously been away from like the group for, well, until maybe January this year, so almost a whole year. Do you see a big difference in terms of like coming back into the team setup and the way kind of, I guess, the values and the belief and things like that have changed?
Yeah, I think we've always had belief, and I think there's a lot of members of the squad that really know how good we can be. But I think across the board, that belief has just grown. And watching you girls perform back in the autumn against France, when they got that draw, that I think that has been huge for the levels of belief within the squad. But I think just people's ability to push each other within training, and when we're in that on the field with each other and kind of calling each other out on things and really pushing the standards across the board, I think that's the biggest difference I've seen since coming back in.
Yeah, we definitely agree. I feel like we're in a much better place in terms of like working towards a common goal and like understanding what it takes to get there and what your role might be in that and all the stuff that goes with it, for sure.
Definitely, whereas I think before we probably had players that did know that, and then others that maybe their awareness was maybe not at the same level, just probably through experience. But no, over the last year, definitely it's changed, and the belief is massive now, I think.
So what comes next? Back to club duty for the time being, and then I suppose the international calendar's not finalised yet for World Cup qualification and stuff like that. So is it very much back to the daily grind?
Yeah. So arrived back, obviously been in Scotland for about 6 weeks, I think. So ages. And then, yeah, got back on Sunday, and then back at work on Monday and back to club training kind of later this week. So I'm back in the gym and stuff, but back on the pitch later in the week with Loughborough. We've got a season to finish there. And then, yeah, obviously, like you say, World Cup qualifiers and things, we've not had those confirmed yet, but hopefully some sevens over the summer maybe as well, to try and keep building on what I've done in my short season.
So it's great to catch up with Jenny. And a proper tough wee scrum half, you're saying, isn't she? She's talked so well. She's straight. She's honest. She's done so well to come back from injury. A vital part of the squad, but you hinted there that she's a different player on the field than she is off it. She's pretty determined, you say.
Yeah, no, she's exactly what you want from your scrum half, in that she is quite sassy and pretty feisty around the pitch. So she keeps us in check, which is exactly what we need.
Sometimes words aren't even needed. It's just a look. She's got the ability to give you the look.
There's a look, and you know you've done something with that. But no, she's brilliant, and honestly so important for the squad to have a player of her experience and knowledge, and someone that speaks as well as she does and really leads as well back into the squad. So yeah, exciting to have her back.
Important for her to work alongside Mary McDonald as well, that others come half, because Mary's quite new to the game. She's not played near as many internationals as games as Jenny, but that'll be an important link as well for the. Oh, she's mentioned mentoring in her day-to-day role at work, but she'll provide information as well, really important information for Mary to develop her as a nine as well.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, Mary kind of came in off the back of Jenny's injury, so that she got her first cap that day Jenny got injured. So she very much kind of learned on the job, but without anyone there really as an experienced player to kind of take her through. She's done so well. A lot of people have commented on just how confident Mary is in terms of a young nine coming in with not much experience, and you can't really tell in terms of the way she carries herself on the pitch and how she's played. But the difference having the two of them there working together, you see them in and around training, after training, chats, etc. So it's massive for Mary, but also for Jen, just to have someone that they can bounce off and do all the extra bits that nines need to do as well. So no, it's good to see, and it's brilliant for us as a squad moving forward to have that depth there as well. Then moving from one competition to another, the Rainbow Cup obviously started this week, and Mossy, you were on comms for both games. Edinburgh were at home to Zebra, important win.
Yeah, it was Friday night, I'm thinking back, Friday night, a lot of younger players getting their if not their debuts, the first start, the first involvements or very early involvements for Edinburgh and stood up really well. So Edinburgh came out in top 24-18 in the end to Zebra. Zebra scored a brilliant late try actually to make that gap a bit closer towards the end. Johan Meyer scored a really good team try. But Edinburgh probably were up against it a little bit in the first half. Scored a good try early on, and then Zebra just almost dominated that first half. But totally different intensity, physicality, kind of purpose in the second half from Edinburgh. Led by a lot of the young players, Ben Muncaster's 19-year-old playing at number 8. He did really well. Matt Curry, 20-year-old centre, who scored a try, defended really well, attacked really well. We spoke about him in comms just as a real kind of almost classic outside centre, number 13. So he did really well. I got Marshall Sykes in the second row. Patrick Harrison came on as an 18-year-old hooker and getting that experience. So brilliant for him to come on at the same time, flanked by his front row partners of Pierre Schumann and WP Nell. So it's almost that perfect blend of exposing young players to really hard competition. And Edinburgh, you did well, 3 tries, much better second half, much better intensity. Really important to expose some young players to professional rugby and come out with a victory as well.
And Glasgow had 2 new warriors as well in their game. Not as positive a game or a result as Edinburgh, but a loss away from home this weekend.
Yeah, one of the poorest, unfortunately, performances for a long time. It comes off the back of, I think, 5 wins as well and the kind of regular season. So it was a performance that I don't think a lot of people saw coming. Just flat in all aspects, poor skill level, poor skill execution, and in all areas of the field. Usually, I think when you watch a game or you're involved a game as poor as that, there's a standout reason as to why it was so poor. I don't think really there was a standout reason, you know, in terms of Glasgow on Saturday, because there was so much poor, and it's, you know, it was just a bad day at the office, a really bad day at the office. You know, the skill execution and then some poor decisions, some poor performances, and, you know, they eventually lost 46-19 to Benetton, who hadn't won a game in the regular season, had, you know, in saying that, had come very close, lost 2 or 3 games in the last minute. Lost 3 or 4 games by a single point, have some quality international players. Benetton played quickly, they offloaded, they had a physicality and intensity that Glasgow didn't have. So fully deserved their big win, but disappointing for Glasgow because it was bad days at the office. But the beauty of their next game is a derby. We go into the 1872 Cup decider and the Rainbow Cup between Glasgow and Edinburgh. It's at Scotson. There has to be a reply to how they played at the weekend. I hope they're not coming for me. And I'm pretty sure that we'll see that in a derby. I think we'll see 2 more experienced teams going head-to-head between Glasgow and Edinburgh. But yeah, Glasgow need to put a few things right. Edinburgh will look to have a more dominant performance than they did, but they'll no doubt welcome back a few more senior players. So yeah, an interesting part of the season, the Rainbow Cup, condensed format, meaningful games, trophy at the end of it, you know, club pride to play for, because you haven't played a lot of club rugby, a lot of these players over the season, and also individual accolades to play for, with a British and Lions tour to aim for some, and an international tour as well to aim for others.
Speaking of tour dates, obviously the summer tour has now been confirmed, as well as the coaching staff for that tour, and some exciting games and new kind of coaches to talk about.
Yeah, really delighted. It's a wonderful opportunity. Mike Blair, who we both know well, coming in as head coach for the summer series, the summer tour, which is brilliant for him. A deep thinker of the game. He's got a real understanding of the game. He's been involved, you know, as a player. 80-odd caps for Scotland. He's captained Scotland. He's played in France. He's played in England. He's back in Scotland towards the end of his career. So a lot of experience and a lot of coaching experience under his belt. So he's going to head up the coaches, which is a brilliant accolade for him, with Peter de Villiers continuing, John Dalziel continuing the good work from Six Nations. And Peter Murchie is going to come in as well, which is another young Scottish coach who's who knows what it means to play for Scotland, who knows what it means to prepare, and he'll bring his expertise in defence. So overall, I think it's really exciting. There's an A game, and then there's obviously away in Romania and away in Georgia, two tough old fixtures in the heat, the European heat, where there'll be a lot of challenges thrown at a potentially younger side if players are away with the British and Irish Lions and a younger coaching setup. But brilliant challenge, and I've no doubt they'll prepare well and perform well.
It's been a real year for, I know, with obviously the way the COVID bubbles worked and stuff like that, that, you know, there is so much young talent now in the Scottish men's game in particular. Players have got opportunities at the professional sides, and now with an A game and potentially summer tour fixtures that they could be involved in, it's a pretty exciting time, don't you think, for like the likes of, you know, these young boys coming through.
Yeah, really, it is. And you know, everybody talks about young players coming through and talk about what the next cab off the rank, and we want to see them come through, which is great, we all do, but they have to deliver and they have to perform. And this year they have, really, without a huge amount of foundation behind them, because they haven't played a lot of rugby for 12 months however long, through no fault of their own or no fault of anyone. So you think, oh, you're Rufus McLean's, your Ross Thompson's, Glasgow, Ollie Smith's come in and played, you know, your Jamie Hodgson's and Marshall Sykes in second row at Edinburgh at the weekend, you know, Jack Blaine, there's a lot of young players. Rory Darge got his first involvement as well, Connor Boyle, Edinburgh. I mean, you could list lots of them.
Yeah.
But they don't just get there because they're there, they get there because they work hard, and once they get there they have to perform, and the more impressive thing is the fact that they are performing. You know, being involved as a young player is excellent. Being around, learning, developing, it's all excellent. It's what a lot of people will look at and see as a headline. But the headline for me is delivering. You have to perform. And through the performances, hopefully that, you know, the next rung on the ladder for them is international recognition, which may be soon or it may be a long way off. But if they continue to perform, then they'll be knocking on the door.
I think as well, the thing that's so impressive about the fact they are performing is that, you know, it's been two really tough seasons for Glasgow and Edinburgh. And for young players to come in there without maybe the experienced heads to pull them through those types of games, they're stepping up and leading, and leading by how they're acting and they're performing.
Which makes it all the more difficult. You know, you used to say in terms of developing young players and blooding young players, you know, not having to develop a lot of them at the same time makes it easier. So almost drip feeding and relying on the senior players around about them. But, you know, that's only one chain of thought. A lot of young players coming through together offers another chain of thought that they've actually played together in under 20s and age grade games, and that they have a rapport that, you know, will be tested under more difficult circumstances in a professional environment, an international environment, but they actually know each other and they understand each other's games. And you think guys like Jamie Dobie, Matt Curry as well, Ben Muncaster, Rufus McLean, they've all been involved, and others, in the Six Nations training squad as well, invited to train, not only invited to train, but stepped up into actual squad members as well. So there's that exposure to, you know, professionals and international. That's all good planning, but I go back to it. The important thing is that they deliver and they perform, and they are. They're delivering without a huge amount of experience, and they won't get everything right. Of course, nobody gets everything right. Everybody makes mistakes. Young players' mistakes potentially can be more costly than older players' mistakes. But so what? They're there, they're learning, and they, I can tell from a young player's point of view, they'll be wanting to make it as hard as possible for the old experienced players, and quite rightly.
Yeah, and I'm sure a number of them will be looking to next year's Six Nations, Guinness Six Nations, to potentially get that first opportunity in the Scotland team. And those dates have just been released, with a very exciting starting date of the 5th of February for Scotland v England at Murrayfield.
That's a big one, isn't it? The 5th of February, Calcutta Cup. Well, certainly what happened after last year, that's really one to whet the appetite, isn't it? I mean, it's 5th of February, I hope. I assume we may be back to increased capacity, some form of capacity at BT Murrayfield, and it's how special will that be to kick off the Six Nations then? And 2000, what year will that be? 2022.
Yeah, 22.
And it's Wales away
the longest year ever.
I know. Or the shortest.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And then followed by Wales away the next again week. And then our second home game of the campaign is the 26th of February. Scotland-France at home, both a Saturday as well. So yeah, here we are, in April 2021, talking about next year. But with the remainder of the Rainbow Cup, summer tests, autumn tests, next season, Lions tests, there's a lot of rugby between now and then.
Obviously, those two summer tests are away in Romania and Georgia. How big do you think that is for countries like that, that don't necessarily often have tier one nations travel there to play, and how good is it, I guess, for the development of rugby in those countries?
Well, it's something we've done often. In Fiji as well, and Samoan played tests, and the South Sea Islands as well. I think it was 2005, I remember going out to play in Romania. It's hard ground, heat, June, July, and it's a different challenge for the players as well. The national team obviously played in Georgia just prior to the 2019 World Cup as well, and I think it's great for the opposition team, so it's great for us as well, just to perform in different environments with different types of pressures, and potentially a younger squad as well, having to be exposed to that quite early on in their international career, younger coaching team as well. It's a hard thing to do, as the statistics show, to perform and win away from home. And there'll be extra challenges wherever you play, but the quicker you can adapt to those challenges and figure these challenges out, the better. And I think playing in hostile atmospheres in different parts of the world is really important. It's something I know that's important to the other nations, but I think it's important to us for our development too.
Okay, and then just to finish up, another bit of news this week is that Tommy Seymour has announced his retirement. Someone you know quite well, Mossy.
It's another really quality player who's announced his retirement. Obviously, we wish him well and in the future, but he's had a massive influence in Scottish rugby. I think it was something like 2011 where he originally joined Glasgow. He's been there that long that I even played against him. I think he's one of the few that are left or just retired now that I would have played against. But massive impact in terms of his ability on the field. I was having a look at some of his stats. 48 tries for Glasgow in 150 games. And out of those 150, 144 were starts. Really consistent player, proven try scorer, brilliant at the... When defence kind of transitioned to being high on the edge almost... like that winger rather than sitting back being up, he was brilliant at that. He led the charge, picked off numerous interception tries, really good defender, brilliant in the air, catching the ball above his head, just amazing skills, and an all-round top winger, top bloke. 55 caps for Scotland, fourth in the all-time try list, 20 tries as well, and it was a line in 2017 where he was top try scorer as well, so that word tries keeps coming back. But he's a quality player who's had a big influence and contributed massively to Scottish rugby.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, we'll be back next week with more exclusive content.